Welcome to the Israel Daily News Podcast. I'm your host, Shanna Fold, and I'm here to get you caught up quickly. I've got some top news stories for you today from Israel, and guess what? You're listening, so you're already on top of your game. Survive and thrive, people. Knowledge is the best weapon. Today is Monday, April 15th, 2024 in the Gregorian calendar, and the 7th of Nisan, 5784 in the Hebrew calendar. Now, let's get to the news. Sunday, the people of Israel regrouped after a nerve-wracking night, sitting at home waiting for an air attack from Iran. While Iran has been attacking Israel and other parts of the world for decades through its proxy groups like Hezbollah, Hamas, and the Houthi rebels in Yemen, this was the first time that Israel and Iran engaged directly in hostilities. Reports were out that Iran had been gearing up to send hundreds of hostile UAVs, also known as unmanned aerial vehicles, to encircle over Israeli airspace. I was calmly nervous. It was the middle of the night when things started to inch into the final countdown. We were expecting an invasion at 2 a.m. By 1:55 a.m., the UAVs had made it to Israel. In a very matter-of-fact way, around midnight, I began filling water bottles, prepared some boiled eggs in case I wouldn't have electricity or gas to cook. I pulled together a to-go bag with my passport, fresh clothes, water, and snacks. A neighbor of mine got in touch with me and helped me locate my nearest bomb shelter just to confirm that it was where I thought it was. People in Tel Aviv with safe rooms in their apartments spread the word that their private homes were open for all those who needed a place to sleep or just hang out for a few hours waiting to see what was going to happen next. By midnight, I was already writing up reports for our new website, theisraeldailynews.org. That's israeldailynews.org. Very exciting that I was able to update that so quickly. And preparing for a live now hit for Fox News' new digital news program. So I did that, and I'll have another with a different news organization tomorrow. These channels typically get in touch with me for updates when something's going on and it's hot in Israel and they want a local perspective. At 1:55 a.m., as the planes entered Israeli airspace, I did something sort of weird. I got into my bed and laid under the covers with the lights off. I was awake. I remained like this for about 5 minutes until I rolled over and saw an email from the folks over at Fox News. Well, I thought about that. I laid for 5 minutes more, feeling pretty weird as I just laid, bracing for an airstrike. But I'll tell you this, it was exhausting. Everyone was tired. Shabbat had been out. People were supposed to be sleeping. And I, too, was feeling really exhausted and overwhelmed. And in order to try to shut things down in my nervous system, I just laid in bed with the lights off. And that's really what I needed in order to recompose and have a little bit of energy. I couldn't go to sleep. I didn't feel comfortable going to sleep when there were about to be sirens ringing out or missiles, long-range missiles that were actually shot from Iran to Israel. It was a little hard to close your eyes for that and actually go to sleep, but I did rest. Well, my rest ended when I leapt out of bed to get hair and makeup done about 5 minutes later. I reviewed my own reports that I had written for the Israel Daily News website. I powdered my nose, I mic'd myself up, I put a dress on, blew out my hair, and I went to go sit in my home studio to take the Fox News hit, which was around 3:30 a.m. When this was over, I did a more robust report for our Instagram channel, which is israeldaily.news on Instagram and Facebook. By the morning, when Israelis woke up or stayed awake, whatever Israelis did, they were thankful to see another day. Some 300 UAVs had come over Israeli airspace overnight. The IDF says they intercepted 99% of them. Those who were awake at the wee hours of the morning report how nervous they were when they witnessed the night skies lit up with hostile aircraft and missiles and trying to decipher which ones are ours and which ones are theirs, ours being the IDF. Israel's Defense Forces spokesperson says a vast majority of the long-range missiles launched from Iran were intercepted outside of the country's borders. Dozens of missiles did, however, make their way into Israeli airspace. I saw some photos of these enormous things. They're very long, heavy barrels of metal that are quite literally launched into the sky and meant to touch down and explode and cause havoc here on the ground in Israel. That was the intention. Israel's Arrow defense system kicked into gear to intercept rockets like the ones that I just described. I will say this. Israel's allies were at work this weekend. You could see it in real time. You could see the countries banding together. You could see in this time of history what it really means for countries to be allies. That has been one interesting thing for me as I've been reporting the news. Nations like the United Kingdom employed British fighter jets to assist in intercepting UAVs. Jordan closed its airways and shot down aircraft that entered its airspace in defense of Israel. By the way, Jordan and Israel have a normalization deal. It was signed in 1994. But the relations aren't always fantastic between Jordan and Israel. So I read today a piece in Haaretz written by a really prominent journalist who discussed how Israel is going to really need to say thank you and be grateful and gracious to so many countries, especially Jordan, which things have not really been great between the two nations. But this obviously was a very clear statement of what Jordan wishes to see happen in the Middle East, which is not for Iran to become the number one player. And so Jordan actually was very active in keeping Iran out of this area. Saudi Arabia also said it would shoot down drones and missiles. Iraq closed its airspace. American forces intercepted drones over Iraq and over Syria. The Americans had to take care of those areas. A few injuries occurred during this time, with one recorded at a military base in the south of Israel. The base's infrastructure was minorly damaged. A 7-year-old Bedouin girl who was seriously injured got hurt by shrapnel after the missile had already come overhead. Her and her family live in a tin shack home in an illegal Bedouin settlement in the desert. Now, if you've never seen a Bedouin settlement, it looks like a tent city almost. It's a big tented area. It's what you would imagine that the nomadic Jewish people looked like in times of the Bible, with tents and animals, and everyone's living side by side. They rely on sirens from the nearby town of Arad, and they heard the sirens in a very weak sound because they don't have any sirens close enough to where they are. They have to keep an ear out for the sirens that go off in the next available city. Because they have no shelters or protection, when they hear sirens, instead of running into a miklat or a mamad, which is a shelter or a protected room, they run outside of their houses and go out into an open space. That's where they think is the safest. And that's where is the safest for them because they don't have any reinforced areas. When the young second grader was entering the house after the missiles were finished, shrapnel fell on her head and it hurt her. She is now on a ventilator in the hospital. Her father told Haaretz newspaper that just last week before this attack, he'd gotten contact from the Israeli government telling him that he needed to demolish his house. And he says that he's distraught that now he has to figure out a new arrangement for living because his tent settlement in this Bedouin area is not legal and Israel is trying to get those people to clean up and clear out. And he says, now I have to deal with that and I also have to deal with the injury of my daughter. And he noted that nobody has contacted him from the government about the injury of his daughter. This is a running theme that I'm seeing about Israeli officials not contacting people who have been hurt or injured. It doesn't seem that their liaison department is working too hard to reach all of the victims of terror that Israel unfortunately has at this point, 6 months into war. So that is something that I think needs a lot more attention. This all comes after Israel hit an Iranian consulate in Damascus, Syria. So this Saturday night attack, of course, there were a lot of things that went into it, but There was an attack that took place on Monday, April 1st. It killed 12 people, including Mohammad Reza Zahedi, a high-ranking Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps commander, and his deputy, Mohammad Hadi Haji Rahimi. Of course, Israel and Iran have been hostile for decades at this point, with Iran's proxies funded and trained by Iran's Revolutionary Guard for years. And when I say funded and trained, I mean money is handed to them, and they are welcome to come to the facilities in Iran and learn military tactics from the IRGC. Iran says that hitting a consulate was like hitting sovereign Iranian territory, because if you go to an embassy or a consulate, once you arrive there, it's like you're on the land of that nation, and that it would be striking back. And then it did strike back Saturday night. Israel has said whoever harms Israel will be harmed themselves. Leaders from the United States are discussing what is going to happen next. I do have some suggestions for the Israeli public. If you're listening to this, some suggestions for you. Know where your closest shelter is. Pack a to-go bag with important documents and a change of clothes, a water bottle, put snacks in there, and fill up some water bottles for your home in case anything gets disrupted. You want to have some water that you can drink and use. Charge up your devices. Make sure that everything has a full charge at all times. And I got this hint from a listener of the Israel Daily News podcast. Take vitamin C as a precaution against a potential nuclear attack. So apparently taking vitamin C is a really harmless and helpful way for you to strengthen your body and protect it from any potential nuclear attacks that may happen. I don't see why not. I took some vitamin C myself last night. Can't hurt, and I had it in the house. U.S. President Joe Biden is praising Israel's defense against Iran's attack and also sharing opposition to a military response. He's calling for G7 leaders to coordinate a diplomatic approach. The U.S. aided Israel in intercepting the drones and missiles launched from Iran, with concerns in Washington about being drawn into a wider conflict by Prime Minister Netanyahu. World leaders condemn Iran's actions, and Biden reassures Israel of U.S. support while cautioning against further escalation. Iran says there won't be more attacks on Israel if Israel and the United States stand down and don't respond. Iran threatened to target U.S. bases if Washington supports an Israeli retaliation for drone and missile strikes. Again, I just want to say that Iran is threatening to target United States bases if the country supports Israel in its retaliation for the Saturday night attack. After 3 hours of discussion on Sunday, Israel's war cabinet did not reach a decision on how the country would respond to Iran's missile and drone bombardment Saturday night. The Prime Minister's office confirms that there will be a response, but the IDF needs to present multiple options. According to Reuters, the entire war cabinet agrees that there should be a response, but the division lies in when the response will be and the scale of it. U.S. President Biden does not veto an Israeli response, although he warns to be cautious and strategic. The U.S. wants to know the details of the response in advance, but makes it clear they will not participate. Israeli Foreign Minister Israel Katz spoke with British Foreign Minister David Cameron and French Foreign Minister Stéphane Séjourné to thank them for their support during Iran's attack. He says, quote, "I told them, it's your time to weaken the Iranian regime, to proscribe the IRGC as a terrorist organization, and to impose crippling sanctions on the Iranian missile project. Iran must pay a price," end quote. The foreign ministry, in a statement to the press, adds, "This attack proves once again what Israel has been saying for years. Iran is the one behind the terrorist attacks in the region, and it is also the greatest threat to regional stability and world order." Sunday, American Ambassador Robert Wood addressed the UN Security Council, stating the council must, quote, "unequivocally condemn Iran's aggressive actions and call for Iran and its partners and proxies to cease their attacks." Not only was Wood referring to Iran's attack on Israel Saturday night, but its long history of support for terrorist groups like Hezbollah and the Houthis, which is a violation of multiple Security Council resolutions. Wood also condemns Iran's transfer of drones to Russia and its targeting of commercial ships in the Persian Gulf. The U.S. says it will explore measures to hold Iran accountable. The U.S. ambassador says the goal is, quote, to de-escalate and then get back to the issue at hand, securing an end to the conflict in Gaza by getting a ceasefire in Gaza through a hostage deal, as well as securing humanitarian assistance to the Palestinians in need, end quote. After its big attack, Iran's national TV service is trying to show civilians in Iran its might by airing multiple false videos of its supposed damage on the state of Israel. What is claimed to be fiery destruction due to missiles and drones in Israel is actually months-old footage of a fire in Chile in South America. Other propaganda regarding Iran's attack has been spread as well. They showed a video suggesting Palestinians were overjoyed and celebrating the attack at the Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem on the Temple Mount, but the clips were actually taken from Palestinians celebrating the end of Ramadan, so it was unrelated. Another video by far-right social influencer Jackson Hinkle claims to show Israelis panicking, where actually it was Lewis Tomlinson fans near the Four Seasons Hotel in Buenos Aires, Argentina, from last week. False videos and broadcasts are likely to be used to capture the world's attention and ensue a strong emotional response from the public. One note regarding the Al-Aqsa Mosque is that there were missiles that could have hit this special holy Muslim site. However, the IDF was able to shoot them down and protect the space and deploy their defense mechanisms so that this holy Muslim area would not get hit by rockets. The photos of the missiles over the Dome of the Rock, which is that big gold dome in Jerusalem, were unbelievable. Today's episode is the 650th podcast of the Israel Daily News, and that does not include all of our special reports, which I don't usually include in my numbering system. In response to that, I want to thank all of you for your interest in Israeli affairs, Israeli politics, our world politics. I also want to thank all of you who personally finance and fund the Israel Daily News podcast with monthly contributions. You can support us with contributions by going over to our website, israeldailynews.org. Our organization is operational thanks to listeners and supporters like you. In response for your contributions, I'll send over a handwritten thank you note to show my appreciation. You can also support us by leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts. 2, you can share the show with a friend. And 3, you can follow us on Facebook and Instagram at israeldaily.news, as well as Shanna Fold. My name has 2 N's in it, and I'm very sensitive about that. You can also find us on Twitter at Israel Podcast. 4 IDF soldiers were wounded near the Lebanese border, with the IDF investigating the cause. Reports are out from Hezbollah saying they planted a bomb there along the border, which was responsible for hurting the Israeli soldiers. The injuries ranged from severe to light, with soldiers from various IDF divisions involved in this event. The IDF is working intensely along the northern border of Israel, which touches Lebanon. Troops are working to clear Hezbollah positions and prepare the state for defense. Kol hakavod to all of the IDF troops that are out right now weathering every storm. And we here at the Israel Daily News podcast hope that the 4 IDF soldiers who were hurt at the Lebanese border will heal and recover to their full capacity. Settlers rioted in multiple Palestinian West Bank or Judea and Samaria villages following the murder of an Israeli teen, resulting in property damage, injuries, and a fatality among Palestinians. Israeli journalist Shaul Golan reported being brutally beaten and having his equipment destroyed by settlers, some who were in army uniform, while the journalist was documenting the events. The clashes escalated as Israeli forces searched for this missing teenager, with tensions already heightened since the outbreak of the Israel-Hamas war in Gaza. I've been reporting a bit about that, about how things are very tense in the West Bank right now. Might be going there next week. to check out some things firsthand. Prime Minister Netanyahu condemned the killing and urged citizens to allow security forces to handle the situation. This all comes after the body of a missing 14-year-old shepherd boy named Binyamin Achimeir was found in the West Bank, also called Judea and Samaria, and the young Israeli Jewish man had been killed by a terrorist. So he had been gone for about 24 hours, and then his body turned up, and it turned out that he had actually been murdered. Prime Minister Netanyahu ordered intense pursuit of the perpetrators and is urging citizens to cooperate with security forces and not take matters into their own hands. We here at the Israel Daily News cannot imagine how this young man's family and friends must feel as they deal with this 14-year-old shepherd who was taken from them. The photos of him with his animals in the fields are hard to look at, knowing what his fate was. This issue is under investigation. An off-duty border police officer shot and killed an Arab man named Jacob Turki in Jaffa during a traffic dispute, resulting in the officer's arrest on suspicion of murder. Turki, a well-respected coexistence activist employed by the U.S. Agency for International Development, was fatally shot after being beaten by the officer. Witnesses described the officer as assaulting him, breaking his helmet before shots were fired, leading to public outrage and protests demanding justice for the victim. Jaffa's Arab community leaders convened an emergency meeting to address this incident, highlighting concerns over police violence and the need for accountability. Turki was 50 years old. Mayor Ron Huldai of Tel Aviv stated that he was a well-known and well-respected Jaffa resident, a social activist who volunteered in Magen David Adom, which is the emergency ambulance services, for many years, and that he was shot dead last night. Again, this comes from Mayor Ron Huldai, who posted this on Twitter, or X, Saturday morning, calling the killing a terrible incident that should not have happened. Turki was wearing a motorcycle helmet and a paramedic uniform when he was seen lying on the ground in central Jaffa. As the off-duty police officer was wearing flip-flops, shorts, and a t-shirt, he bashed him in the head. Another man got in between the two, and then about 10 gunshots were heard. Several people ran away from the scene. This is a very disturbing story, and we here at the Israel Daily News send our condolences to the victims, the family, the community, and all the people in the video clip that we watched that actually were there to witness this horrific event, and we will be following this story. I usually have a nice kicker for you at the end of the show. A kicker is a news term for a light story that you might end the broadcast with. Well, today's news was pretty heavy. Since it's the first podcast out since Iran's attack on Saturday night. That being said, Israelis are regrouping here in Israel. Business as usual. I attended a wedding of a colleague last night, and the people of Israel continue on with a little more care for one another than perhaps in other times throughout the modern history of Israel. I also found a lot of people discussing that the first thing that they did when they woke up on Sunday morning was find their friends, find their family, and sit for a morning coffee. It was sort of nice and comforting to learn that Israelis woke up Sunday morning after a tough night and took to the cafes with their friends and families. I myself did something similar, except I wasn't so comfortable to be away from the safe room, so I had some coffee and breakfast with a dear friend of mine in her home on her balcony. Thank God we were able to have sunshine and a cup of coffee together. I'll admit the coffee that was probably supposed to be about an hour and a half lasted for about three, maybe even four. And the last hour of it was just us sort of sitting in silence on the couch, just unwinding. And I would say we didn't know what we were doing at the time, but after it was over, I realized everyone needed that time on Sunday to regroup. Am Yisrael Chai, the nation of Israel lives. We live for another coffee. We live for another day. And we always do. Don't forget that. All right. Well, that is it for today's show. Today is Monday, April 15th, 2024. Tel Aviv has a low of 16 degrees Celsius and a high of 25 degrees. That's 61 degrees Fahrenheit for the low, going up to 77 degrees for the high. Subscribe to the Israel Daily News Podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you're hearing it from. We are everywhere. Don't forget to sign up to our Israel Weekly News Wrap. The Israel Weekly News Wrap is a newsletter with the top five stories coming out of Israel from throughout the week. And of course, with a personal note from me at the top. We're calling it the Letter from the Editor these days. You can sign up for that at IsraelDailyNews.org. A big thank you goes out to our social media director, Michelle Milner, Sivan Hadari, our consultant, and Maya Kay, our outgoing intern. We surely will miss her. If you're interested in working with the Israel Daily News team or interning with us, please do get in touch. I'll send you off now with a song called Yehye Tov, which means it'll be good. This is a new cover song by Morty Weinstein, Idan Tamler, and Nicole Raviv, all talented Jewish and Israeli artists. They don't even live in the same place, but they make music across the seas together. The original of this song was produced and sung by Jasmine Moalin, and it really picked up steam and sort of became an Israeli anthem of this war at this point. So enjoy this song, get to know this song. If you're in Israel, you know this song backwards and forwards. Have a great and productive day and an excellent week. Shavua Tov, everyone.
החדשות עברו ליד האוזן ואמרנו תודה על עוד יום לא מנסים לכבוש את העולם רק לנקות את הלב מהאבק עוצרים בצד הדרך מסתכלת בעיניים שאני אומר לה גם אם יישרף הכסף נשב ונצחק במרפסת אני ואת והשקט לא צריך כלום קרן שמש גם אם ייקח לנו זמן תראי שהכל מכוון נשב מסביב לשולחן אני מבטיח לך שבסוף יהיה טוב הפרחים ישובו לפרוח תראי שיהיה טוב יהיה טוב גם אם יש עוד דרך לעבור בסוף יהיה טוב הפרחים ישובו לפרוח, תראי שיהיה טוב.
יהיה טוב.
יהיה טוב.
יהיה טוב.
גם מתוך החושך יתעלק האור.
בסוף זה רק אנחנו בחדר, מה עברנו בשנה זה כמו עשר. לא זה לא במילים זה התדר ניסיתי לעשות לנו סדר לפעמים רואים רק את הסדר נמצא את הדרך בלי נדר הזמן טס כל כך מהר אנחנו בטח לא נזכור את מה שאין רק מה שכן אפשר לעזוב את העיר ניסע על הכביש המהיר עתיד תמיד מזהיר לא צריך כלום רק אוויר נמצא איזה אור שבור נחיה שם כאילו ברור שמדובר בהרמון רק תזכור
שבסוף יהיה טוב הפרחים ישובו לברוח תראה שיהיה טוב יהיה טוב גם אם יש עוד דרך לעבור בסוף
הפרחים ישובו לפרוח תראה שיהיה טוב
יהיה טוב אם יקרה לך משהו זה הסוף שלי אני בטח לא אקח את זה לאט את זה לבין וזה בטח טוב מדי ועוד מעט העיקר שוב תחזר אמיתי אם יקרה לך משהו אני משתגע אם יקרה לך משהו זה הסוף שלי